And we will help you keep it running thanks to the help we get from ASC Certified Technician Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul, where I had the chance to spend some time this past week. Good morning, Dan. Good to see you again.
More time than you like.
No, it was always
a couple cars.
Yeah, I've never had to do that. I needed to bring Tony's vehicle in to get repaired and mine as well. And, of course, I brought it to the place I know that's the best. Dan Burns has a place called Lloyd's Automotive. And, Dan, what I had now, you replaced in Tony's truck, his SUV, a thermostat.
Yes.
How do those things work? Why does a thermostat, or why can a thermostat go out in this case?
Well, to warm a car up more quickly, when the engine is cold, the thermostat is a spring valve. And when it's cold, the valve is closed, the thermostat is closed, so that the coolant will not circulate. It just stays in one place and gets warm much quicker.
Okay.
And then as the coolant starts to warm up a little bit, the thermostat has a spring in it. As that spring gets warm, it allows the valve, the thermostat, to open. And then the coolant circulates through the engine and the radiator and so forth. And it allows you to have heat more quickly. And it allows the engine to warm up more quickly. You know, as we know, the engine is not running at its best until it's up to full operating temperature.
Well, I wonder if this is the reason I told Tony, I said, you know, the miles per gallon seems to have become worse.
I think that's true. I think that, well, that's for sure true.
If it's running, it's cold.
If the engine's running cold all the time,
yeah,
you are not getting good gas mileage. And if you'll remember last week, Denny, we had a caller call in with a great analysis of why we get poor gas mileage in the winter, and it was, you know, rolling resistance and gasoline blend and a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, but cold, stiff,
cold temperature,
fluids, yeah.
And that was one of the things that he described very well. And that's exactly right. If your engine's not warm, it's not getting good mileage.
Well, if you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. Dan has helped us out for so many years now, and he'll bring you at least an idea or two of what you may need to do. If you need to bring your vehicle into your favorite dealer or your favorite shop, you're going to be armed with a little more information that maybe you did not have earlier. Let me give the phone number and the text number, folks. We have both already. 651-989-9226. Keep in mind, Dan will be here till just about 7:45, so don't wait. If you have a car care question, send us a text, which is 81807, or give us a call, 651-989-9226. Now, the other issue I wanted to ask you about, because I had the choice when I needed a power steering pump replaced, I had the choice of either doing a brand new whatever a part, or maybe what?
A brand new part from the manufacturer.
From the manufacturer, yeah.
Or a rebuilt part.
Remanufactured,
where they take an old one that you send back in and they take it all apart and remanufacture it. And in a lot of cases, on many components, remanufactured's fine. We use them all the time, mm-hmm. and it keeps the price down. It helps. But with power steering pumps in particular, we just have not had good luck. We have had way better performance from the new manufacturer, the original power steering pump, and so that's just one that, you know, we at Lloyd's have decided we don't do it that way. We use a new one. Trouble is they it's not that they don't work. They do work, but they oftentimes the remanufactured ones are noisy.
Oh, interesting.
Or they don't work as well as the new ones. And you told me that in your mind, you think it's even working better than before.
It seems like it. And, it seems like the steering is more responsive.
Yeah, I don't think that it is just in your mind. I think it is that, you know, like the thermostat and the power steering pump, they don't just all of a sudden, bang, quit working. They, over time, have gotten inefficient and don't work as well as they used to. And then eventually it gets to the point where you notice it. And that's when you bring it in and when we fix it. But oftentimes they'll be failing along the way. And I think that's what happened in your case.
I think you're right. And normally there was no, we're going to get to the phones here, but normally I would hear, like in the old days, kind of a squealing if there was a belt or some power steering issue, right?
Right.
And is that squealing normally a belt sound rather than a pump sound?
No, it can be both.
It can be both.
The pump itself will make noise also.
Okay. Yeah.
So not just the belt squealing. The belt squeals when it slips.
Well, good job you guys there at Lloyd's Automotive.
Thank you.
It was fantastic. All right. Let's put you back to work here on this Saturday morning. Rob is first up here on the phone. Rob, what is your question for Dan?
14 Impala, the dealers are trying to upcharge for fluid flushes, like 40,000 miles I've got on the car, like brake flush, and transmission, and then are there not fuel filters on that car?
There probably are not fuel filters on that car, and you know, I have had to make the choice in my pay in my career and in my business if I'm going to follow the manufacturer's recommended thoughts on changing fluids and so forth. And I've decided that that's the right thing to do. You know, they pay the engineers, they engineer the fluids, they know what they have, they know what's going on in their components, and they know when the fluid's going to get dirty, and they know that that new fluid makes a difference and allows the vehicle to last longer. So I don't think that it's an upsell. I don't think that it's a hustle. I think that it's really a legitimate thing. And I've learned from experience doing this for a long, long time that my customers that come in and do regular maintenance don't come in and for repairs.
Yeah.
I mean, the cars just don't break.
It's preventive maintenance.
I think that maintenance is a good value. Both of your time, you know, you can pick when you're going to do it instead of having the car break down. So it's a good value for your time. And I think it's a good investment in the car that actually in the long run allows you to operate the vehicle longer, cheaper. So
now, one thing I've learned doing the show with you all these years is read the manual. Check the, well, there's a lot of good information.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, if it's not in the manual, if a brake fluid flush isn't recommended in the manual, then I would say don't do it.
Don't do it.
And maybe it is a hustle. If the manufacturer is not recommending it, then I don't do it. You know, and some of the, many of the fluids, in fact, are lifetime fluids. A lot of the transmission fluids and coolants and so forth, they don't recommend changing them anymore. And I believe that too. They've engineered it. They know what they're doing, and I trust it.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Rob. Good question. Before we break, let's go to Elaine, who's calling this morning. Elaine, what can we do for you?
Yes. A couple of days before Christmas, well, this is a 1990 Toyota Camry, and a couple of days before Christmas, and once again last week, when I turned the key in the cylinder, nothing happened. And then the second time, it started right up, and it started every time right after that. The battery isn't quite a year old, but it did go back, and they checked it, and I believe they said they checked the alternator. I got a new, what is described as lock-in cylinder or lock cylinder in August of 2012, and it is not an aftermarket. Any ideas?
Well, that yes, I do have some ideas. One, that the first one was going to be the ignition switch, because we have seen those fail. If they, and you could ask them this, when they changed the lock cylinder in your for your ignition switch, did they change the whole thing, including the electrical part of it, or was it just the mechanical part of it? If they did not change the electrical part of it, that could be where your problem is. And then the other thing that I would recommend that you just have them do is change the starter relay. It's very inexpensive. It's just like plugging in a fuse, and we've seen trouble with those. What I don't want to have happen is where you've lucked out, where for the past couple times it's acted up, and then you, you know, eventually that's not going to happen. It was, you were able to get it started, but that's not always going to happen, and you're going to be stuck. So I'm going to recommend that you just take a chance and change a couple of things just to eliminate them, because they're really cheap, and see if that doesn't take care of it.
Okay, so Elaine, when she should take it back and ask them to do two things.
Two things. One, did they change the electrical part of the ignition switch at that time? And number two, ask them to replace the starter relay.
All right.
See if that takes care of it.
All right. Good luck with that, Elaine. Thank you. John, you hang on. We're going to take a quick break. Texters, hang on as well. If you want to ask Dan a question via phone, 651-989-9226, or send a text, and we'll get to those too, 81807. CCO temperature reading on this Saturday is 1 above 0. No mention of wind chill, because the winds are only about 3 miles an hour. Dew point at a -6. Again, 1 above on 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Danny Long here with Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue. Where on Grand Avenue are you?
We are at 982 Grand Avenue, which is right between Lexington and Victoria. We're also on the web, as you know, at lloydsautomotive.net, L-L-O-I-D-S, lloydsautomotive.net. Or we're on the telephone. Give us a call, 651-228-1316.
And great coffee shops around there, too.
There are. There's lots to do, isn't there?
When you guys were working on my vehicle, and I was wearing a real scruffy old down coat, and I looked destitute, but I walked into a Caribou to get some coffee. And a woman said, I'm buying a bunch of other coffee, so you go ahead of me. And I said, oh, fine, thanks, sure. And she said, by the way, put his on my bill, too.
Really? So I thought, one more doesn't matter.
I guess. That was pretty nice. So thank you, whoever you were.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. John is calling with a question for you. Go ahead, John. Dan's listening.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Dan, I got a question. I notice now when it's cold out, there's some white, I call it motor mucus in my oil. And my neighbor says it's because I have good compression, but I think it's because of moisture when it's cold like this. Do you have any correct answer for that?
It is just moisture. It's condensation that's going on inside the engine, and the evaporative system can take steam out of your engine, but it can't take liquid out of your engine. Mm. And so as time goes on and things warm up again, that'll clean up. And it'll be just fine.
There's
nothing you can do about it. It's just part of the process. Don't panic. It'll be just fine. It'll clean up. You know, change your fluids on schedule, and you'll be just fine.
All right. Very good, John. John leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. If you'd like to call in your car care question, or why don't you send a text, 81807. Let's pick on up on some of those, Dan. A 2010 Chrysler 3.8. What do you prefer? Transmission flush or just the screen and filter?
Whatever the manufacturer recommends.
It goes back. That's true.
You knew I was going to say that.
I did, but that's true.
The difference is if you change, you should do both, really. If you're going to do it, you should do both. Because with changing the filter and fluid, you remove the pan and you drain the fluid out of the pan, which is about one-third of the total quantity of transmission fluid. But in the process, you're changing the filter, which is a good thing. If you're flushing the transmission fluid, you're exchanging all of the fluid. You're getting all the fluid, old fluid out, and putting in all new fluid, but you're not changing the filter.
Ah.
So neither one is perfect.
Right.
Together, it is perfect.
All right. So,
if the manufacturer is not recommending it, I don't bother with it because it's complicated and... And the fluids, the right fluid when changing transmission is really tricky.
Is it?
Yes. To get the right fluid that the manufacturer recommends, and it's expensive. So if they're not recommending it, don't do it. If they are, then do it how they recommend. And oftentimes it's a filter change, but even most commonly it's just a drain and refill. You drain the fluid out. Refill it, and they have you do that periodically, and over time, you're exchanging a good portion of the fluid, but not all at once.
Interesting. We were talking earlier, Dan, about thermostats, and this text came in. I'm just curious. I have, texter says, a 1998 Chevy Silverado, a 5.7-liter V8. I had rebuilt heads put on, and ever since then, the temperature gauge on the dash does not go above 150, but the heat works fine. Should I worry?
Well, it's I wouldn't worry, but I would have it checked. You know, we can put our scan tool on there and see what the engine temperature actually is. If you're getting good heat, chances are the engine temperature is fine.
Is fine.
And perhaps your gauge is not reading correctly. And if that's the case, when they did your heads, maybe they put a new sensor in that's not quite right. And in that case, don't worry about it at all. But I would confirm that you are getting up, you know, that engine temperature should be more like 190 or above, and at full operating temperature. And so if somebody puts a scan tool on it, they'll be able to read that quickly and see what it's doing.
Texter says, and then we'll get back to the phones. My car takes 530 oil, but I bought 1040 by mistake. I go through a lot of oil. Will that hurt if I add 1040 to my engine?
Well, if you go through a lot of oil, maybe that's a good idea.
It's thicker viscosity.
It's thicker. It'll stay in there a little bit better. I'd be a little bit hesitant this time of year. That 1040 oil gets awful thick.
Does it?
When it's really cold out. Now, we're getting out of that season, so it'll probably be fine, but when it's severely below zero and you have 1040 oil in there, that's pretty difficult to crank over and get started in the morning. So I think for the spring and summer season, that 1040 oil will be just fine.
Just fine. Let's go back to the phones. Dan is on line one. Go ahead, Dan. You're on with Dan.
Yeah, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2004 GMC Yukon, many miles, 270 plus. Perfect, good running vehicle. But last week we were going down the road and all of a sudden the fan kicked in for the heater that seems like it's going at about two-thirds of max speed, and we have no control. You can't shut it off. You can't increase it, can't decrease it. It won't shut off when you turn the car off or the vehicle off. The only way I can shut it off is to pull the main fuse. I'm wondering if you would think it's probably the heater control itself, and are they expensive to replace, or is there something else? I don't believe there's a relay in that circuit.
No, and the fact that it's the fan's running at all, of course, tells you that the motor itself is fine, because that's not what the speed of the fan is controlled by something else, and that would be the fan controller or the switch. And probably the least expensive way for you to figure this out would be to bring it in and have somebody get into your, there's of course a computer for the heating system, to get into that computer and see what's going on. They can see what the what it's set at from the switch to see if the switch is working, and then they can see what the fan speed is trying to do. And if it's not allowed to do it, then it would be the fan controller. And I don't think they're horribly expensive. I mean, I don't know prices very well, but I've never heard that that's a terrible deal to get involved in.
Okay.
And it probably is the fan controller itself that's bad, but the cheapest way for you to get it figured out would be to take it in and get some help with it.
All right. There you go, Dan. Before we break, Henry is waiting to ask you a question on the horn. Go ahead, Henry. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2017 Subaru Outback four-cylinder engine. Since the weather's gotten cold, I've noticed it's stored indoors. It cranks kind of slow. The other morning, it refused to start entirely. It didn't have enough to turn over the engine, but the lights and all the other stuff worked. I got it charged and got it into the dealer. Talked to the service advisor, and essentially he is telling me that I'm storing the key fob too close to the automobile. It's in the house, but it's within 25 feet, and that is causing a continual drain on the battery that's ultimately causing my car not to start. That sounds a little questionable to me, Dan.
Well, I'll tell you, that does sound a little fishy. It sounded a little fishy to me the last time I heard it. And I told somebody that, but I have heard that. So now you're the second or third time that I've heard that's the manufacturer's recommendation is, put the key fob somewhere else. And my recommendation would be try it, see if it takes care of it. But, it's a brand new car. But that is what the Subaru dealership is telling people.
Interesting.
Because you're not the first story I've heard about that. So try it and see how it goes. If that takes care of it, then it is that simple. What they're really saying is that if you're storing the vehicle for a period of time and the key fob is there, there's a computer in the car that's not shutting off. It's staying alert to the fact that the key fob is in the neighborhood.
How about
and
that?
I would think they should be able to program that differently, so that won't happen. But they haven't done that yet. And someday there might be a recall for this if this is indeed the case.
Sure.
But in the meantime, put the key fob somewhere else.
Farther away
and see if that doesn't take care of it.
All right.
There's a whole bunch of fancy tests we can do to see if there's a draw, and we could certainly test this for you, but I wouldn't bother with that. I think I would just do what they say and see how it goes.
It's a cheap experiment.
Yep.
All right. Hang on, Dan. We have to take our break. We have more show to come. Those folks on the line, hang on. Dan will be here for about another 12, 13 minutes or so. So don't go away. In the Twin Cities, few clouds, CCO temp one above. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Danny Long here with Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. We'll let you know how to get in touch with those good guys there before Dan leaves. He'll be here for about another 8-10 minutes or so. Dan, let's go back to the phones, then we'll pick up on more text messages. Chip has been waiting. Go ahead, Chip. What is your question?
Oh, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My question is, I inherited a van. It's a 91 GMC Bandura. It's really nice. Plush inside. I got it from my dad. He was the only owner. I know it needs work and a complete brake job, but where would I draw the line of how much money I want to put into it?
You know, we call that the death march. When do you what do you do to keep it alive? And when do you quit? And my advice to people is, you know, at this point, you have nothing into the van. Assume it's there's nothing. Doesn't owe you anything. You don't owe it anything, and so you have nothing into it. So, when people are making a decision, when they're looking at an estimate that I give them, I say, "Well, it owes you nothing. Would you pay that much for the van if you were buying it today?" And you know, if I've checked it over and said, "Well, this is what it needs today," and other than that, the vehicle looks pretty safe. And if for a couple thousand dollars, you can get your van fixed and going again, I say, well, if you could buy that van for a couple thousand dollars, knowing that it was all fixed up, would you? And of course, the answer is always yes. It's a great sales tool for me.
Yeah,
but it's true. It's just the truth. And so that's kind of what I would say is, you know, switch to the keep it alive mode and do what is necessary to keep it safe and operative. And beyond that, you know, wait, move slowly, do the things that need to be done today and spread the cost out. And if something catastrophic happens, if the engine fails or the frame breaks in half or if the transmission fails, then it's just time to be done with it and call the junkyard.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if you can keep it running, I think it's probably, and if you like it, especially if you like it, do it. Keep it going.
It's good math. When you think about
that's right. Yeah. Right. Well, all and right. If you've seen what you know, even a lease payment on a new car is, it's like it does not take very many months to add up to a significant repair.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, good point.
Right.
Good luck, Chip. Thank you. Let's grab some text messages before you take your leave. We were talking about thermostats earlier. My car takes approximately 20 minutes to reach normal operating temp when the outside temp is single digits. When the car is parked in a heated area, about 65 degrees, it only takes about 10 minutes. Is this normal, or is there an issue with the thermostat?
There you go. That's exactly right.
That's what
it
is.
You should have your thermostat changed, and your car will heat up much more quickly and much more efficiently, and it'll work way better for you.
Yeah.
So have that done.
Perfect. I have texture says a 97 Chevy Suburban. There is an incredible amount of play in my steering wheel. What could this be?
And worn parts. And you should take that as your warning that if you're noticing it, it's significant. And there's a whole bunch of components that add up to your steering, being able to steer the vehicle. And if they're loose, they're on the edge of braking. And if they break, you lose control of the steering. So that's dangerous.
You
need to get that vehicle in and have it inspected and replace the worn parts and get that steering tightened up again.
Here's a text, Dan, that says, I have a 96 Chevy 3/4 ton with a power steering pump leak. If I had fluid, it works, but leaks out. Could it be the hoses leaking? What do you think?
Most commonly, it's the hoses leaking, but it could also be the pump. It could also be I don't know if it has a steering rack or gear, but it could be the steering rack or gear. If you take it into any shop, they will, for very little money, tell you what's wrong with it, give you an estimate, and you can decide if you want to repair it or not.
Very good. Let's see. We have a 2012 Subaru Outback. What would cause a gas smell in the car compartment on occasion?
That's another complaint that I hear often on the Subaru vehicles, and they have a really nice hose clamp that they use on all their fuel lines, but over time, that the hose has a tendency to shrink and the clamp gets loose. And it especially when it's cold, it'll leak just, you can't even see the gasoline, there's so little of it, but a little bit of gas makes a big smell. So if you just go tighten all the little clamps, it takes a Phillips screwdriver, tighten all those little clamps, just a half a turn, that'll solve your problem and you won't smell the gas anymore.
Here's a 2008 Ford Explorer. Texter says, I just changed the transfer case fluid and seals. Now when I took it out for a test drive, the four-wheel drive works great, but the speed is showing 100 miles an hour and kicks into governor mode when I'm going about 40.
Wow. Something's out of whack there. I don't know if in the process the speedometer gear got broken or changed or something. Something in the math, though, for the speedometer went wrong, and the computer's getting wrong information, and of course it's going to do wrong things with that wrong information, and that's what's going on. So you'll have to have that rechecked and see what's going on with the speedometer gear.
All right. Now, I don't know if this story is true. I have not heard this, but it doesn't surprise me. Did you hear the story? And this is a text message. A Minnesota man was charged with stealing a car and calling the owner less than 2 hours later for help in starting the car. Yeah. I hadn't heard that.
I don't know if that's true or not.
It could be.
It'd be silly. Yeah.
We have no way of documenting this, of course, right now. The texter says he or she needs to get another car and really can't afford a brand new one. And you've mentioned this before on occasion. Any tips on buying a used car?
Yeah. Go find the one you're looking for. Find the one that meets your needs. There's all sorts of reputable, good, really good aftermarket sales lots that you can find both at the dealership and not. And if you search, the websites like Craigslist or CarSoup, find a car that meets your needs, and then be sure that you take it into a professional and have it inspected, and be sure that it's exactly what you're paying for. And oftentimes a shop like ours can help you determine if the price is fair or not also. So use your shop for support and then just search and find what you're looking for.
Did you at Lloyd's have any more than usual people coming in having repairing heating because of heating problems in their vehicles, more so this year than?
That's the seasonal part of our business. We're fixing heat today.
Yeah.
As like you.
Yeah.
Know, Tony lived with that van for the car for the past couple years because it was not cold and it worked well enough that he didn't notice. And then when it got severely below zero, there's no heat and that doesn't work. So yes, we had a lot of that, and thank God it won't be too long before we're back to worrying about air conditioning. I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be nice.
All right. Let's see. Where's this texter? Any harm in delaying replacing a thermostat? I have a Ranger, so the cab warms up readily.
Well, that's in delaying. You do not need to change a thermostat just for maintenance. They don't recommend just changing them unless you're having a problem. If the engine's running too cold or you're not getting enough heat or whatever. But, the only trouble that you run into is the engine, if the thermostat is not working correctly, is the engine is not at full operating temperature and it's both inefficient and a little bit hard on the engine to have it running cold all the time.
Yeah.
So if the engine is not warming up properly, you should change your thermostat. It's not good for the car.
I'll be doing some mathematics on the Tony's vehicle to see if the gas mileage has improved.
Yeah, well, we're coming into spring, as our listener last week told us, the blends change.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Dan, we have to take a break here and invite you back next week.
I'll be here. You bet.
All right, good deal. Thank you, Dan. But how do we get in touch with you guys?
Give us a call. We're at 651-228-1316. We're on the web at lloydsautomotive.net, LLOIDS, lloydsautomotive.net. Or come on over, 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul.
Excellent, Dan. Have a good week.
Thanks, you too.
Stay tuned next for Jack Farrell's Wine Chat. It's One Above here on CCO.